All right, good evening, everyone. So, welcome. It's really beautiful and incredible to see such a nice crowd, such a nice olam. I guess, you know, as people come in, you'll direct them to this side of the room. Still plenty of seats. Just to begin, really, a couple of thank yous. A thank you to all of you who have really made the time to come out and to discuss a topic that is very important and very necessary for us all, the topic of Shalom Bayis. Also, a very special thank you to our executive director, Julia Shainman, who's always working on behalf of the shul. The truth is, this series was Julia's idea, and whatever Julia says, I do. So, Baruch Hashem, so it worked, and thank you for all of you for coming. Also, just a thank you to Josh and Becca Friedman, who have dedicated all of the shiurim and drashos of this month, Le'iloi Nishmas, Josh's father, Yisrael Yehuda ben Rav Chaim Rafal, on the occasion of his first yard site, and for Sammy and Malka Esterson, who are dedicating all the shiurim this month, Le'iloi Nishmas, their parents, Yitzchok Leib ben Aaron HaKohen, Sarah Rachel Bas Baruch, and Hinda Bas Henech Ephraim. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an aliyah, and the families a Nechama. You know, when thinking about this particular topic of Shalom Bayis, so the truth is, I want to begin kind of in a way that's not the best way to begin this series. The ideal way to give a Shalom Bayis series is really to give separate sessions for men and separate sessions for women. First of all, because it becomes a little bit like a support group, which is incredibly wonderful and important. But on a serious level, it's because the dynamics of Shalom Bayis are different for men than they're different for women. And we're going to touch a little bit tonight on the idea that men and women get different things from relationships. They get different things from marriage. They need different things from marriage. But because of time constraints and other scheduling issues, so we're kind of bringing everyone together also, there's not really that much to do in Baltimore. So I have a pretty strong feeling this is actually the most fun thing to do in town tonight, next to Panoply. You know, I'm sorry. Okay, good. Like we were saying, this is the best event in town for tonight. And so we're going to touch on a couple of topics, kind of in broad strokes. Also because Shalom Bayis, real exhaustive Shalom Bayis, I feel probably works a little bit better in smaller groups. And again, probably single gender groups as well. But I think tonight offers us an incredible opportunity to really focus on building our marriages. Because the truth is, whereas every single marriage ultimately is different, because every person is different, every relationship is unique and different, at the end of the day, there are certain basic core principles that are necessary for successful relationships. I want to give a very special welcome to my wife, who's joining us here for the Shalom Bayis series. Baruch Hashem. She went over with me everything I'm supposed to speak about, which was exceptionally helpful. In fact, it's funny, whenever I see you got Shalom Bayis, the first thing Aviva always tells me is, whatever you do, don't give examples from our marriage. I made this mistake early on in my rabbinate. It happened once or twice, and she didn't even have to tell it to me tonight, and I already know it. So tonight, what we're going to cover over the couple of minutes that we have together, a little while that we have together, is a couple of fundamental ideas for A, building strong marriages, and B, avoiding certain pitfalls in marriage as well. So what I'd like to try to do is, hopefully all of you have a source sheet in front of you. We're going to use these sources as a springboard for some of our conversation tonight. So there's an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says in number one, Sha'alu Talmid Aves Rabbi Dostai Rabbi Yanai. So the students of Rabbi Dostai asked him the following. Mipnei ma ish machzer ala isha. Why is it that men run after women? Ve'ein isha machzeres al ish. And women don't run after men. Now the truth is, the Pashat Pshat, the simple understanding of the Gemara, as Rashi understands it, is if you look at number two, Rashi's machzer al isha, Adam panui mevakish umachzer ad shenose. So sometimes it appears, at least at times of the Gemara, that men were much more eager to get married. So men would run after women to get married, and yet women never seem to be as eager as their male counterparts to get married. So the Talmidim, the students, asked Rabbi Dostai, why is this? So Rabbi Dostai answered, Mashallah Adam Sha'avad Lo Aveda. He gave an example of a person who lost an object. Mi machzir ami. If a person loses an object, who looks for who? Balaveda machzir alavedaso. If a person loses an object, the object doesn't look for the owner, But instead, the owner looks for the object. And Abba Dostoy says something incredibly amazing. On a basic level, he's explaining that when we look at the Genesis narrative, we know that Chava was created from Adam. There was a piece, a rib of Adam that was taken from him. As a result of the creation of Chava, Adam is lacking something. He's missing something. And so he tries to reclaim that part of his self that is lost. Rabbi Dostoy sees this dynamic play out in marriage. That ultimately, again, a man is out pursuing a wife because a man is missing something in him. There's part of me that's deficient. There's part of me that's not whole. There's literally, again, a gaping hole inside of me that's only filled once I find my bashert. Once I find that rib. Once I find that other piece of my soul. But the truth is, I think what Rabbi Dostoy is also highlighting is something incredibly important, which is each of us get different things out of marriage. Because of the size of this group, we're not going to make it interactive. But if we were doing this in a smaller group, we actually did this a number of years ago. I don't know how many years ago. We did a Malava Malka at the home of Shirin Bat Sheva Messing, where we had a little bit of a smaller group, and it was much more interactive. And one of the questions that we discussed was, what do you want out of your marriage? And it's amazing to see how many dramatically different answers you find. And it's not the pshat that men give one kind of answer and women give a different kind of answer. People want different things out of relationships. People want different things out of marriage. That's what Rabbi Dostoy is highlighting over here. Men and women look for something different out of a relationship. Some people look for companionship. Some people look ultimately, again, for a life partner and helping to actualize dreams and aspirations. People look for different things in different circumstances. And the Gemara is highlighting that. When the Gemara says, why do men run after women and women run after men? First of all, one could make the argument that might have been societal. One could say that times change and women run after men just as much as men run after women. But at the end of the day, what Rabbi Dostoy is trying to highlight is that people look for different things in their relationships. And the reason why this is important is because to understand that no two marriages are the same. I can't tell you how many times I deal with shalom bayis issues where the conversation often begins like this. A couple will come in, they're having a problem, and one of the spouses, and I'm not going to say if it's wife or husband, why can't we be like the Schwartzes? Right? Why can't... Do you see what a good husband he is? Do you see how loving and doting and thoughtful he is? Do you see what an attentive wife she is? And that's fundamentally problematic. Because A, first of all, you never know what happens in someone's home behind closed doors. There are plenty of people who put on a great show and everything looks fantastic and wonderful. But the moment ultimately, again, that the door closes, everything falls apart. And not only that, even if nothing falls apart, even if it's as great on the inside as it looks on the outside, great as it looks on the outside, you might have different needs in your relationship. So what works for one couple may not work for a different couple. It's our obligation to figure out in our own respective marriages what it is that we're looking for and what is it that we need and want to give in the relationship. Another piece. The Gemara says in number 4, another amazing Gemara. Umipnei maha ish mekabel pius ve'ein isha mekabeles pius. This is incredible. Literal translation: for what reason is a man who is angry likely to accept appeasement, but a woman is not as likely to accept appeasement? Now, I'm not stating this as fact, I'm just telling over a Gemara, right? But it is interestingly enough that the Gemara is saying essentially, why is it that men are quicker to forgive and forget than women are? Why is that? So the Gemara says, Ze mimakom shenivra, vizu mimakom shenivres. Each person's disposition reflects the origin of their creation. Man, who was created from dirt, earth is pliable, right? Earth is mushable. So therefore, again, a man, much easier to let things go. Woman was created from the rib, from bone. Bone is much harder. Bone is much tougher. And as such, the Gemara understands, therefore, the willingness to forgive and to forget may be a little bit less. Now again, this is not a discussion about who's more forgiving, who's less forgiving. Why am I bringing up this Gemara? It's important to understand that we have different orientations and dispositions. The fatal flaw in relationship building is to think that your spouse is to be your mirror image. People often think that the goal of a great marriage, how do you find a great marriage partner? Someone who's just like me. You know, the Maharal comments on this. It's going to sound strange, but you'll understand why he says. The Maharal says, if you think about the natural order of the world, leave aside all of your preconceived notions of moral codes, moral frameworks. If I were to ask you, who would be the most logically suitable marriage partner for you? Who would you say? Of course, after your spouse you're sitting next to. Right, but after, who would be the most logical person for you to marry?
Someone like yourself.
So, who?
You.
You, okay. If it couldn't be you, the Bible says something amazing. A sibling. A sibling, think about this for just a moment. I know it sounds very strange, but think about this just a moment, right? After all, again, you have the same parents, no in-law issues, right? Same parents, right? I know the same family dynamics, the same weird people in your family are the same weird people in my family, right? It's all the same thing. I know who you, I know what you grew up with. I know what your life was like. I know everything. It makes so much sense. It would be so much simpler. The Maharal says, because part of the avoda of marriage is learning to live with someone who is not like you. You see, we think that successful marriage means we become the same. We're the same, right? We're the same. We're like mirror images. You can finish my sentences. I can finish your sentences. That's just corny, right? That doesn't translate into good marriage. There are plenty of people who could be on the same page. They're not necessarily in a loving and sustaining relationship. The Maharal explains that the whole essence of marriage is to show yourself that you have the ability to build a life, to build a family, to build a future with someone who is not like you. But to begin that process, you have to accept that your spouse may have different dispositions and orientations. And this is incredibly important. There's an excellent book called The Gift of Therapy. The Gift of Therapy was written by Dr. Irving Yalom. He's an 87-year-old psychiatrist. And in this book, The Gift of Therapy, in chapter 6, he tells an incredible story. I didn't put it on your sheet. I'm going to read to you an excerpt from it. He says the following. Dr. Yalom says the following. Decades ago, I saw a patient with breast cancer who had throughout adolescence had been locked in a long, bitter struggle with her naysaying father, yearning for some form of reconciliation, for a fresh new beginning to their relationship. She looked forward to her father's driving her to college, a time when she would be alone with him for several hours. But the long-anticipated trip proved a disaster. Her father behaved true to form by grousing at length about the ugly, garbage-littered creek by the side of the road. She, on the other hand, saw no litter whatsoever in the beautiful, rustic, unspoiled stream. She could find no way to respond, and eventually lapsing into silence, they spent the remainder of the trip looking away from each other. Many years later, she made the same trip alone and was astounded to note that there were two streams, one on each side of the road. "This time I was the driver," she said sadly. "And the stream I saw through my window on the driver's side was just as ugly and polluted as my father had described it. But by the time she had learned to look out her father's window, it was too late. Her father was dead and buried. Look out the other's window. Try to see the world," he's talking to therapists, "try to see the world as your patient sees it. The woman who told me this story died a short time later of breast cancer. And I regret that I cannot tell her how useful her story has been over the years to me, my students, and my patients." And Dr. Yalom ends off with this following piece. "A happy life is one in which I can accept that me and my spouse look at the world from two distinct windows and thus see two different things. I cannot hope or expect that my spouse will start seeing the world through my window. What we must strive for is to respect the fact that other people see the world through other windows and try to listen and empathize with what they are seeing and experiencing, even if it is not what I am seeing and experiencing." One more piece. "The blessings and depth of a relationship can only emerge when each side learns how to truly listen to and respect the point of view of the other. I may not see things the way you do, but I must be able to honor your truth. Marriages and so many other close relationships fall apart when one party feels he or she possesses the exclusive objective truth. Truth in marriage is usually subjective. So I thought this was an incredible piece. This idea that in marriage, we often see the world through different windows. You see your window, my wife sees my window, I see my own window. And the truth is, what we see on my side, the stream looks beautiful. On the other side, the stream might look polluted and ugly. I might not understand what my significant other is seeing or experiencing, but it in no way diminishes that particular reality. Sometimes the great challenge in Shalom Bayis is that we expect our spouse to come meet us where we are instead of trying to figure out a way to meet our spouse where they are. There's an incredible Gemara. The Gemara says, this I did put on your sheet because this is a good Gemara to have. The Gemara says in number 5, Baha Amri Inshi, people say, Isisach Gutza, if your wife is short, Gachin Vitilchoshla, bend down and whisper to her. Meaning, if your wife is short, there are two different ways you could speak to her. You could tell her, stand on a chair and say what you have to say, right? Come to me. Or I can go to her. Now understand, Chazal here are not just simply telling you about husband-wife versus wife-husband. These are marriage dynamics. So many Shalom Bayis issues are wrapped up in this reality that I want to make my spouse into something. I have the ideal image of what a husband should look like, the ideal image of what a wife should look like. Instead of taking the time to figure out, who are you? What are you? Instead of trying to make you in my image, I have to try to figure out who you are. If your wife is short, if your husband is short, don't ask them to get on a chair and go ahead and step up to you, but bend down to them. Try to meet them where they are. Try to understand who your significant other truly is. And this is incredible because so many times, Shalom Bayis issues. I know we're starting with the negative. We're going to go to the positive also. But Shalom Bayis issues often come up because a husband or a wife doesn't meet expectations. Doesn't meet expectations. This happens all the time. You're not meeting expectations. Whatever those expectations may be. Where those expectations are in your career, expectations in intimacy, expectations in child rearing, whatever it might be, you're not meeting my expectations. And sometimes what we have to make sure that we're doing, what we're not doing in marriage, is creating inappropriate or unfair expectations. You know, meaning if your third grader took a trigonometry test and failed it, no one would get angry at the third grader. Why? Because it's simply beyond your skill set. Yet how many times do we make demands and create expectations of our spouses that they may not be able to fulfill? How many times is it that I want my spouse to be more emotional? I want them to be more loving, more caring, more emotive. You know, not everybody's wired that way. Not everybody's brought up that way. Not everybody's raised in a family like that. It doesn't mean you can't work on it. It doesn't mean you can't acquire that skill set. But again, sometimes instead of always focusing on what your spouse needs to be doing to reach the expectations that you have set, bend down and speak to them. Look out their window. What's going on in your life? What's happening through your window? Let me try to look at the world. Let me try to look at our family. Let me try to look at our life. Let me try to look at your life. Not through my eyes, but through your eyes. So lesson number one that I want to try to hone in on tonight is that instead of trying to make our spouses in our image, try to appreciate the image they have. We often spend life looking out through our window without appreciating the fact that our significant other may be looking through a different window. And unless you take the time to understand the window they are looking through, you'll never truly understand your spouse. Take a look at number 6 on your sheet. To take this a little bit further, and this is going to be the topic, getting to know your spouse is kind of going to be the topic for tonight. So this idea of understanding that I have a window and my wife has a window, and we may be madly in love, But it doesn't take away the fact that we have two different windows. And on my side, the stream is beautiful and clean. And on her side, the stream is littered and polluted. And so I could spend a whole marriage, I could spend a lifetime saying, no, the stream is fine, the stream is fine, the stream is fine. But that's not the stream that she sees through her window. That's not the reality that she's living with. And so if I keep on trying to foist my reality, my expectations, my needs on the other, all it does is create incredible and unending conflict. Take a look at number 6. To build on this concept a little bit, there's an incredible Mishnah. The Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin, again, we're not going to get into technicalities of halacha, but I want to show you something very interesting. The Mishnah says, Ha'isha niknis b'shlosha drachim. So the Mishnah over here discusses the idea that there are three ways that marriage can be accomplished on a technical level. Kesef, money, shtar, document, biar, relations. So the Gemara says, kesef minalan. So remember again, so today, contemporarily, couple gets married, so we affect kiddushin with kesef. With money, okay, we use a ring instead of money, but under the chuppah, the chassan takes a ring. He says, Hari at mikudesh asli betaba zugidas Moshe v'Yisrael, and they are married. So the Gemara says, from where do you know ultimately, again, that marriage could be affected with money? So the Gemara gives an incredible source. Kesef minalan, gamar kicha kicha miste Ephron. So the Gemara learns that is incredible. From where? Parshas Chayisara. That's where it's learned out from. From where? From specifically what? The purchase of Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Avram Avinu goes and he purchases the cave of Machpelah. It was a field with a double-decker cave, an above-ground cave, and a subterranean burial plot. He purchases it from Ephron. So without getting into the technicalities, the Gemara, the Torah uses the same word of kicha, to take, ultimately by marriage, kicha by the purchase of Ma'aras HaMachpelah. And the Gemara says, just like Avram purchased Ma'aras HaMachpelah with money, so too marriage can be affected with money. Beautiful. Beautiful. What's the problem? If you don't have money, if you don't have money, don't get married. That's number one, right? Good, good. That's a different share, right? But again, so what's the problem? Again, when you see this Gemara, what bothers you? Where are we learning out the concept of marriage from? Death. Right? Now, no marriage jokes over here, right? This is a Shalom Bayit. But isn't it interesting, right? Isn't it interesting that the Gemara is learning the source for the concept of kiddushin, of affecting kiddushin with money, from the purchase of a burial plot? So strange. There are so many other ways the Gemara could have come to this conclusion. Yet the Gemara makes what's called the gzeir shava, finds a similar word in two different contexts, builds a halachic bridge between the two. It says, kicha by the purchase of Ma'aras HaMachpelah, says kicha by kiddushin, just like Avram bought a burial plot for his wife with money, so too you can affect kiddushin with money. Why the connection? Or I should say differently, in the Sefer Eretz Yisrael, I didn't put this on your sheet, but the Eretz Yisrael writes, he says, Tzarech lahavin, hashaychus ze lo ze. What's the connection between the purchase of Ma'aras HaMachpelah and marriage? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zecher Tzaddik Livracha says something so incredibly amazing. He says, Ma'aras HaMachpelah had two parts to it. There was a part above ground, and there was a part below ground, right? There was an actual cave above ground, and then there was, again, a cave underground as well. And the Rebbe says something incredibly amazing, that the Gemara is trying to teach us that every relationship has two parts. There's the revealed part, and there's the hidden part. The revealed part, which is the part that's above ground, and then there is the hidden part, which is the part that is below ground. Ma'aras HaMachpelah is not simply a burial plot. It's a metaphor for successful marriage. Successful marriage has a revealed aspect and has a hidden aspect. And the Rebbe explains so beautifully. He says, what does it mean, the revealed aspect? So the revealed aspect are the ingredients that are obvious, that are necessary to make a complete marriage. So what are some of the ingredients necessary to make a complete marriage? So of course, on a basic level, attraction. And again, you know, if we were doing this a little bit differently, we would speak a little bit more in depth regarding, again, the importance of intimacy and the need for meaningful and impactful and fulfilling intimacy in a marriage. But there's an incredible Gemara. The Gemara says, "Mipnei ma amra Torah Nida l'shiva. This is an incredible Gemara. Why did the Gemara says, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that a woman should be a Nida for 7 days? On a biblical level, Nida only lasts for 7 days. We have a series of different rabbinic laws that were tacked onto it, but 7 days is the Daraisa for Nida. Why is that? Listen to what the Gemara says. Bepnei Sharagilba. Because what's the danger in a marital relationship? What's the danger? That the physical relationship becomes stale. That people get used to each other. They use each other, become stale. Therefore, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Amra Torah, Tehei Temeya Shivas Yamim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let husband and wife separate for 7 days. Kidei Shetehei Chaviva Al Baila, Kishas Kinisas Al Chupa. Listen to the wording of the Gemara. That let them be apart for 7 days. This say when they get back together after a week, it should be as exciting as the wedding night. Now you say to yourself, the rabbis have nothing better to do than to worry about my intimate life? And the answer is that the Gemara and HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood that one of the most important pieces in a successful marriage is a fulfilling and meaningful intimate life. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can you imagine this? HaKadosh Baruch Hu ensures that we keep the spark in our physical lives. That's important to God. It's important to God that there's a spark, that there's passion in our physical and our intimate lives, as much as any other halacha that we observe, as much as Shabbos, as much as Kashrus, as much as Shatnez, as much as anything. How do I know that? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu legislated a whole body of Hilchos Nida, Taras HaMishpacha. Why, says the Gemara? In order that after the mikvah, it should be like the wedding night. It should be the excitement and looking forward and an incredible passion of being together, just like the wedding night. And this is so incredibly important. Again, we're in a mixed crowd, so I'm going to speak about this very just a little bit superficially. But so many Shalom Bayis problems come up because couples lose their spark. And it's hard. It's hard when you have kids. And when, even if you don't have kids, right, when you have careers and you're running around and there's this and there's that and I'm not as young as I used to be and there's this and there's a million different things to do and a variety, it's easy for that spark to go away. But that spark, that physical attraction, that's the revealed part of the cave. You know, a marriage without fulfilling intimacy, again, I should have really said this in the beginning. I'm not a therapist. So you could feel free to disagree with anything that I'm saying. Wait till after the shiur, if you don't mind, right? But again, I have a little bit of experience just seeing things. A marriage without a spark of intimacy doesn't have a long shelf life. It just doesn't. Because that relationship, that intimacy, it's the marital glue that holds a husband and wife together. Now, a marriage can't survive just on intimacy, right? That's not enough. That's a shallow physical relationship. But that's a major part of the revealed part of the cave. And lest you think that this is just my opinion, again, here you have the Gemara. The Gemara says, it's interesting. The Gemara could have said, why do we have Hilchos Nida? Why do we have Taras HaMishpacha? Why should we separate for 7 days? I could have given much better answer. The Gemara says, we want a man to focus on his learning. For at least 1 week out of the month, he should focus more on his learning than his wife. No, focus more on Chesed than your... It doesn't say that. Want husband and wife to be apart for a week so that when they're back together, it's fireworks. When they're back together, it's like the wedding night. When they're back together, it's as exciting with the eager anticipation like the first time. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants that in our lives. Of course, again, this is not our topic for tonight, but intimacy in a Jewish marriage also really works within the framework of Kiddusha, works within the framework of holiness. It's not simply a lustful, self-satisfying act. There are halachos that dictate it. There are realities that dictate it. But this is the revealed part of the cave. You know, there's an amazing Gemara. The Gemara Maseches Tainis discusses the story of a man by the name of Abba Chilkia. Abba Chilkia was a great sage. He was the grandson of another famous man, a man by the name of Choni HaMa'agel, Choni the circle drawer, right? So remember, you know the story of Choni, right? It was a big drought. He wouldn't leave the circle until it rained. It rained. What happened? So Abba Chilkiah's grandson also had a power of tefillah. To make a very long story short, there was a drought in Eretz Yisrael. The rabbis came to Abba Chilkiah and asked him to daven for rain. So what happens? So Abba Chilkiah It's a whole story, but he's out in the field. Interestingly, he was a farmer. He was just a farmer. So the rabbis met him in the field. They walk back home with him. They noticed that when Abba Chilkiah came home, his wife came out, and the Gemara says, Nafka divisu kimekashta. Mrs. Abba Chilkiah, when her husband came home, came out and was dressed beautifully. She was wearing a beautiful dress. She was wearing jewelry. So the rabbis were like a little surprised. They said, Abba Chilkiah, why is your wife coming out all dressed up on a regular weeknight? And Abba Chilkiah says something amazing. He says, Amar lehum, kidei shelo etein einai b'isha acheres. So that I shouldn't look at other women. My wife wants us to be a unit. And my wife wants us to have that spark. And so my wife invests in a physical relationship. She invests. You know, that investment takes time. And that investment takes energy. And that investment often could be used in so many different ways. But at the end of the day, attraction and physical intimacy and a meaningful sexual relationship is the revealed part of the cave. There are many other parts of the revealed part of the cave as well. But again, just to give you an example, there are certain things that you need to make a marriage work. And again, I want to point out, I'm not suggesting this Gemara, that therefore the obligation to keep the intimate life interesting and exciting falls upon the woman. It falls upon both spouses, right? It behooves a husband to understand his wife and what it is that she needs. And it behooves a wife to understand that ultimately, again, she has the ability to forge a relationship with her husband with a bond that hopefully he's only sharing with her and no one else. It takes both spouses to be able to build that revealed part of the cave. What about the subterranean part of the cave? What does that represent? So the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. The Rebbe explains that if you go back again, I didn't put this on your sheet, but in the beginning of Parshas Chayisara, so the Torah writes, Vatamas Sarah b'Kiryas Arba, Sarah Yeminu died, and what happens? Vayavo Avraham lispod lisara v'lifgosa. Avram comes to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. So the Rebbe makes an amazing observation. And he says, you know, in order to eulogize someone, what do you really have? Let me say it differently. You have to what? You have to know the person. To eulogize someone, you really have to know them. You have to know them. You know, if you've ever been to a levaya, you know, you've heard eulogies from people who don't really know who they're talking about. I remember I was at, many years ago, I was at a funeral like this. I think I told this story in one of the shurim past weeks. And there was a person that I did not know well. And someone got up and they were talking about what a pious woman she was. So pious and so devoted to everything. Her Judaism was so important. A grandchild got up next and said, oh, Grandma, what we're going to miss most are your crab cakes. Right? And like everybody's looking around, okay, is she pious or is she crab cakes? You know, so you could tell sometimes when it is that a person doesn't know. Vayavo Avraham lispod lisara v'lifkosa means Avram knew his wife. He knew his wife. He knew who she was. He had a profound understanding and appreciation for who she really was. The subterranean part of a marriage is, do you really know me? You would be surprised how many people are married for years and years and years and are relatively happy, right? And raise children and raise a family and build careers and build a home and all this stuff. Yet they don't necessarily truly know each other. There's an incredible book, aside from that Gift of Therapy, which you should put on your reading list. Another important reading, and this is good couples reading as well, is of course John Gottman's book of the 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work. An incredibly important book. It's like the ABCs. It's Shalom Bayis. It's Building Marriage 101. It's an easy read. He's a great author. Happens to be a frum guy. So it's really incredible. He did his homework on this. And Imamish is like, he's like the Rebbe of Shalom Bayis. So he has 7 principles. And his first principle is what he calls enhance your love maps. I'm going to quote you from his book. He says it following. He says, in contrast, emotionally intelligent couples are intimately familiar with each other's world. I call this having a richly detailed love map. My term for that part of your brain where you store all of the relevant information about your partner's life. Another way of saying this is that these couples have made plenty of cognitive room for their marriage. They remember the major events in each other's history, and they keep updating their information as the facts and feelings of their spouse's world change. When she orders him a salad, she knows to ask for his dressing on the side. If she works late, he'll tape her favorite TV show because he knows which one it is and when it's on. He could tell you how she's feeling about her boss, and exactly how to get to her office from the elevator. He knows that religion is important to her, but deep down she has doubts. She knows that he fears being too much like his father and considers himself a free spirit. They know each other's goals in life, each other's worries, each other's hopes. This is what Dr. Gottman calls building a love map. A love map is, do you know your spouse? Do you really know your spouse? And I'll give you just a couple, if you have a pen and paper, you could jot these down, and don't do it now. I don't want anybody getting into any arguments. But you could do it as a little bit of homework. Simple questions like, does my spouse know? If I were to ask my spouse, what are the traumas I have had in life? Do you know your spouse's traumas? Do you know your spouse's dreams? Do you know your spouse's insecurities? If your spouse were to ask you, what is my greatest life accomplishment to this point? What would it be? What are my stresses? What do I worry about? What would I do with the money if I won the lottery? What was my childhood like? These are the type of questions. You see, all of us know what time I have to go ahead and do carpool. Everyone knows what I have to get from the supermarket. Everyone knows when the bills have to be paid. The details of our day-to-day living, we're very well versed in. And the details about how to run a household and how to run a marriage, we can do. But what about the part of the cave that's underneath the ground? What about the subterranean part of marriages? What about the real things that speak to the core of my husband or of my wife? Do I know the answers to these questions? And this gets to a core obligation of the need to get to know each other. You know, I'll tell you something interesting. As someone who has to deal with a lot of inane shidduch phone calls, so I find it fascinating. There's an interesting dynamic, a very interesting dynamic. When people are going out, there's 5 million questions. 5 million, everything. Questions like, why do you even need to know that? Right? Like, I don't even understand. Like, sometimes you wonder with these, like, if somebody conducts like a sociological experiment, or are they looking to marry off their child? Like, which one is it? So something amazing happens. So when it comes to dating, right, there's a million questions, right? Because why? I really want to know the person I'm getting set up with. And then something amazing happens. What is it called? It's called marriage. And suddenly, I don't really need to get to know you anymore. Like, we know each other. We're married. We're in this together, right? We've got this. We're good. We're fine. An amazing thing happens that sometimes the only knowledge I have of the most important person in my life is the knowledge that I gained before we were married. Right? In the exploratory phase, in the investigative phase, that's when I gathered all of my information. Now we're married, there's too much stuff to do to really kind of get to know you, get to know me. I like you, you like me, we coexist pretty well. Let's keep going forward. And what Dr. Gottman is saying is, what that ends up leading up to is marital estrangement. Unfortunately, it happens too often, where people wake up and they say, you know what? I don't know you anymore. Maybe I knew you 5 years ago. Maybe I knew you 20 years ago. Maybe I knew you 30 years ago. But I don't know you anymore. Because what happens in life is we change. I'm not the same guy who sat on the date in the hotel lobby. Because a lot has happened since then. Right? My life has changed. My trajectory of my life has changed. My family has changed. My stresses have changed. My losses have occurred. My setbacks have occurred. Accomplishments have occurred. And as a result, I'm someone different. And so too often, all I'm focused on is the person who is the cave above ground. But I stop getting to know my spouse in that subterranean area. That ability really to get to know each other. And I know it's going to sound trite, but this is why there's an absolute need for husband and wife to set aside time with each other. Everybody's busy. Everybody's busy. I'm just as busy as anyone here. I find time to walk with my wife. I try every day. If not, and it's, even if it's 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and it's not the power walk, it's not the triathlon, right? But what's the goal? The goal is a couple of minutes to catch up. It doesn't. You don't have to spend $150 at Serengeti. I mean, you can. Please, go for it, right? But you don't have to do that to, like, have a meaningful bonding experience with your spouse. You could go ahead and just turn off your phone and walk down the block. You can go to the quarry. You could grab a cup of coffee. Or you could just simply sit in the living room after the kids go to sleep, maybe at some point in time, and have a few minutes of quiet. It doesn't require anything big or Herculean. But you have to carve out the time to get to know each other. What's happening in your life? And I don't. When I say what's happening, I don't mean like the kind of like obligatory thing we do when we walk in. How was your day? Oh, good. How's your day? And they go, how's your day? Your day, your day, your day, your day, your day, your day. Good. Everybody's good. Fine. Great. Okay. Good. And then let's go. Right. That's nothing. That's meaningless and empty. That's checking a box. Right. It's pretending like I care. It's actually taking the time to say, what's going on? And by the way, you know what happens sometimes, and let's be honest. And I think this happens much more with men than with women. I ask my wife, how are you doing? And in my mind, what am I saying? Please let everything be okay. Because I literally cannot listen to it. I can't, not you. I'm just like, I cannot do this. It has been such a long day. I'm exhausted. Please let her be okay. Her mother's okay. The kids are okay. This one's okay. I don't have the bandwidth for it. So sometimes, again, in relationships, you push yourself to do things. And if you're going to... So sometimes, by the way, I want to tell you something important. You don't always have to ask, how are you doing? And in fact, I would say, if you're not really prepared to engage, don't ask. Because the only thing worse than not asking is asking and then making it abundantly clear that I actually don't care, right? I'd rather be giving a kidney, right, than going ahead and listening to your tirade about how this happened or this teacher this or this that. I don't want to listen to it. It's okay. Sometimes it's actually okay to say, you know what? Maybe we'll talk a bit more tomorrow. I'm a bit exhausted tonight. I'm tired. It was a crazy day. Right now, I just want to relax a little bit. We'll reconnect in Eretz Hashem in an hour, in 2 hours, tomorrow. That's okay. But at some point in time, frequently during the week, you have to make the time to ask, how are you doing? What's happening in your life? Because everybody has their stresses. And what happens often is, when I feel I can't discuss my stressors with my spouse, I internalize it. And when I internalize it, I become angrier. And as I become angrier, I become resentful that I have no one to share it with. And then if you look happier than I look, then I'm resentful. Why are you so happy? And I'm so unhappy. We're in this together. You're not my partner. And again, you've heard this before, right? And round and round and round until there's a blow up. And again, we all know how that feels. I mean, not all of us, hopefully. But we know, we can imagine how it feels. You have to take the time to get to know each other. Getting to know your significant other doesn't end under the chuppah. That's when it begins. Because every stage of life changes us. And it's almost like you have to get to re-know your spouse after every stage we know. When we look back at our lives, for those of us who are in our 40s, 50s, 60s, and we look back at when we were younger, we're nothing like we were when we were, I mean, more often than not, we're nothing like we were when we were younger. Even if you're in your 30s, and you look back in your 20s, we change so much over a relatively short amount of time. And if I'm changing, my wife is changing. And if I don't know who she is and she doesn't know who I am, then unfortunately we could end up on two dramatically different pages. So the subterranean part of the cave is carving out time to make sure that we get to know each other. And I know this sounds like very cliche. I'm not going to say the date night or things like that. You're all smart people. You figure out how to make the time. We have to make time. I want to tell you something very important. A meaningful and blissful and loving relationship is not rocket science. And it's not even all that complicated. All it takes are two people who are committed, willing to work, willing to put in the effort, willing to ultimately see through the window of the other. Not everything is through my window. Appreciate the other person's window. Bend down to them if they're shorter than you. Don't make them measure up to all of your created or fictional expectations. Take the time to get to know them. Take the time to connect with your spouse. Stoke the fire of intimacy. Bring the passion back into your life. However, again, every couple is different. These are the basic building blocks for going ahead and building a meaningful and successful relationship. And I'll end off with one last piece. With this, I'll conclude. There's an incredible Ma'arei Naim. If you look at number 7, so the Ma'arei Naim says something so beautiful. We're not going to read all of this. But again, he actually quotes it from the beginning of Parshas Vayera. And the beginning of Parshas Vayera, so the Torah discusses that the Malachim, the angels, come to visit Avraham Avinu. Remember, he's just a few days post-circumcision. So the Malachim are coming to visit him. And they ask him, Aye Sari Ishtecha. They say, where is Sari, your wife? Where is Sari, your wife? So the Gemara actually says something very, the Gemara says, from here you see that you should ask a man about the welfare of his wife, and you should ask a wife about the welfare of her husband. Okay, so the Ma'ari and Ayim says there's only one problem with this. Nowhere do we find that the angels ever asked Sarah about the welfare of Avram. We see the Malachim, the angels asked Avram, where's Sarah? But they never asked Sarah, where's Avraham? And the Ma'ari and Ayim says something so incredibly beautiful. 7 bays. Amnam, ha'emesu. The reality is, says the Ma'ari and Ayim, ha'emesu. They only asked Avram, where's Sarah? Vishoresh kavanosam hayesh ayidiri yasal Sarah, yedu hisgalus midas Avram. This is an incredible Ma'arei Naim. Let's translate the words and we'll explain the concept. The Malachim said to Avram, Avram, if we really want to know who you are, we need to see Sarah. Because every husband is reflected in his wife, and every wife is reflected in her husband. Marriage represents a synergistic partnership between two people. And the beauty of marriage, says the Ma'arei Naim, is that my wife is my mirror and I am her mirror. And the Ma'arei Naim says something amazing. Now again, I'm gonna give it the introduction by saying it doesn't apply in every single situation. But the Ma'arei Naim says sometimes, when you see a deficiency in your spouse, really what you're seeing is a deficiency in yourself. When you see something broken in the other, your spouse is your mirror. The truth is, it's not necessarily even just related to marriage. We see dynamics like this with parents and children as well. But in marriage, I've found this to be an incredibly dynamic idea. Because so many times issues come up in a marriage and something happens and a husband will say, I can't believe she did that. Or a wife will say, I can't believe he acted that way. So, of course, sometimes the reflex is to lash out and to argue and to yell and to scream and to say, how could you? But sometimes you have to take a step back and you have to say, am I really seeing a reflection of that which is broken in me, in the face and in the actions of my spouse? Our marriages, our spouses reflect us. And when you see something broken in the other, the first order of business is not to give them the recipe to fix themselves, but the first order of business is sometimes to take internal stock and to ask myself, is what I'm seeing in my spouse really a manifestation of that which is broken inside of me? And imagine this for a moment. Imagine when you encounter marital turbulence, if instead of getting ready to unleash marital shock and awe, right? Because you did it again, you behave this way again. Imagine I take a step back and I say, you know what? Is there something in me that requires a tikkun? Is there something in me that requires a fixing? Is maybe my marriage in this state, not simply because of what the other did, but because maybe the deficiency I see in my beloved is the deficiency that actually exists in me. Now, is this always true? No. Sometimes in marriages, one spouse just does something objectively wrong. And they are totally and wholly at fault. And there is no sharing of the blame. The blame only rests squarely on one person's shoulders. That does happen. But if I were a betting man, which I'm not, I would venture to say that more often than not, when things go south, there's often some combination of ingredients. And often both spouses play some type of role in the unraveling of the marital bond. So often when we see something wrong in the other and we're ready to pounce, take a step back and ask yourself, is this maybe a message to me about what I need to fix inside of myself? So to kind of close this all out, so what we hopefully try to accomplish a little bit tonight is to try to appreciate the fact, as Rabbi Dostoy said to his students, that people need different things out of marriage. And again, we're going to discuss that more in next week's class, next week's shiur, about different things that different people need out of relationships. And that's when next week we'll discuss the concept of communication and how communication is different for different people. Because if I need X and you need Y out of a marriage, then I'm going to communicate one way, you're going to communicate a different way. So we'll speak about that next week. But at least for tonight, we understand that people need different things out of marriage. We have different dispositions and orientations. We see out of different windows. And it's not the pshat that my window's right, your window's wrong. Your window is your window. My window is my window. Your window is how you view the world, which is a composite of your life experiences, which are unique to you. And my window is the composite of my life experiences, which is unique to me. So I have a choice. I could spend my marriage telling me, your window's wrong, your window's wrong, your window's wrong. Or I could take an opportunity, you know, move over a little bit. Let me look through your window. Let me see what you see. Let me see the world through, we try to see the world and try to see life through your eyes. Because maybe if I do that, then at the end of the day, I'll be able to appreciate and understand you just a bit better. Instead of always asking you to step on the chair and come up to me, maybe I'm going to try ultimately again to bend down a little bit and try to meet you where you are. We saw ultimately again the connection between marriage and Maras HaMachpelah, strange connection, right? Marriage and death. The connection being Maras HaMachpelah is the metaphor for marriage. Just like Maras HaMachpelah had an exposed part, right? An above ground part, a revealed part, and a subterranean hidden part. Marriage has the revealed part. The things that we know are the necessary ingredients to make a successful marriage. Intimacy, shared goals and dreams and aspirations, commonalities, a personality click, an attraction like we spoke. And then there's the subterranean part. The subterranean part is, according to Dr. Gottman, that love map. Do I really know my significant other? Or have I been content to rely on what I know about you from our dating life, from our courtship? That'll be the part that will sustain me until 120. That, of course, is a marriage that's doomed for failure. In order to make a meaningful, blissful relationship, we have to get to know each other over and over and over. And at every stage of life, we change, which means the courtship has to begin over and over again. Make time to get to know each other. Make time to explore the subterranean part of the cave of the other's persona. Make time to really get to know that person with whom you are building a life. And lastly, when we see a deficiency in our significant other, it is tempting to pounce and it is tempting to attack. But instead, we have to humble ourselves a little bit and ask ourselves, maybe the crack in the facade that I'm seeing in my beloved wife or my beloved husband, maybe that's a reflection of the crack that I have in my facade. Maybe she's my mirror. And what I think are her imperfections are in fact the things that I have to try to fix within me and within my life. So we'll stop over here for tonight, but we should hope. I give us all a bracha. It's wonderful to see such an incredible showing, and I hope that everyone will continue. It's a three-session series. It only gets better from here, Amir Hashem. So I just hope that in the merit, we all came out because we all want to build better marriages. And coming to a night like this, right, when I'm sure all of us have a million other things to do, that in and of itself is an incredibly important thing. We'll discuss more about the role of spirituality and religion in relationships in a subsequent one. But one thing is clear, which is you can't build a good marriage without HaKadosh Baruch Hu as your partner. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should see that we're all here tonight because we want to be better. We want to be better for ourselves. We want to be better for our spouses. We want to be better for our mishpachos. And halavai natsichos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will partner with us in building beautiful, meaningful, loving, and blissful marriages. there is Ma'ariv in the small base medrash for Rav Ingersoll.
We'll get there.